How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
The Texans come into Nissan Stadium and get a W, 24-21 against the Tennessee Titans on Sunday. And for all intents and purposes, the Titans no longer control their own destiny. They need some help, plenty of help. They did get a little bit of it last night, potentially, with the Buffalo Bills beating the Pittsburgh Steelers. But the bottom line is, as Joe Rexroad is in for Derek Mason, who is recovering, I believe, from some shoulder surgery. I don't think I'm violating any HIPAA laws there, Joe, by telling people what's wrong. Derek's pretty open about his football maladies over the years. Brayden Gall, Morning Drive, welcome to the show.
And, thank you.
And listen, for all intents and purposes, the Texans took control of that game in the fourth quarter. There are going to be way too many people way too focused on so many silly, small, stupid plays that don't matter. The bottom line for me is the Texans dominated in the fourth quarter. Their last five real offensive possessions either ended in points, touchdowns, or an interception in the end zone. The Tennessee Titans put up little to no resistance on defense for the final half of that football game, including the fourth quarter, and it caught up with them, the injuries in the secondary and the special teams. And now the Titans are no longer in control of their own destiny. They need help from the Texans, and they need help from the Steelers if they expect to get into the playoffs.
Pretty big downer, man. Pretty big downer for Nashville. And you're right. You know, the thing is, I think the play that people will talk about for a long time after this game is the Firkser play at the end zone, because you're talking about 7-0 Titans, all of a sudden it's 14-0 Texans, you know, 7 minutes of game time later.
It's a 14-point swing.
So,
but the Titans got their own 14-point
swing.
Well,
that's the thing. Yes.
That one balances out.
This is always a fascinating discussion, you know, because it sounds to me like you're one of those people like, hey, whatever happened to this point, now, what about now? Because the Titans did tie it up. And then, to me, the best two players on the field won the game. But I think you can also say,
referring to Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, assuming.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. I probably should have mentioned their names.
It's okay. It's okay.
But I also think you can make the case that if that Firkser play goes another way and it's 7-0 Titans and they don't have the 14-0 hole after, by the way, Ryan Succop went to 1-for-6 before that. But if you could definitely make the case that it just all works out differently. I love these discussions. It's all guesswork on our part.
Well, and that's part of the fun, right? And I do agree that you cannot overstate how important that play was. The Texans also were going to put their foot on the Titans' throat until Jeffrey Simmons and Jayon Brown, or whoever was going to field the interception punt in the end zone there. I actually think it was actually impressive how everybody got out of the way and let Jayon Brown go up and get that, because that's one of those where you could see three Titans hitting each other in the face, and then the ball hits the ground, and you're like, oh my God. But it's a 14-point swing, but the Titans did get their own 14-point swing. They made the miracle play that they needed to make to sort of kind of counterbalance the Firkser drop, which, of course, again, if you missed it, Ryan Tannehill throw basically, and I think people were questioning the call, which I think is silly. I think even you put that on Twitter. You didn't say that you were questioning it, but that the call would be second-guessed.
Yeah.
And it's hard to second-guess a call when 99% of the play is executed perfectly, and then it just a crazy bounce at the end of the play ends up in some guy's lap, and all of a sudden he's running 88 yards, and you know it's back the other way. Like that should have been a touchdown. There's no question that's a huge play in the game. There were so many huge plays in the game. But at the end of the day, the Titans had a chance. They were in the game. They had made the big defensive stop in their own end zone. The game is tied, and you couldn't stop Deshaun Watson. He made throw after throw after throw in the fourth quarter, many of which went to DeAndre Hopkins. I think he had 100 yards receiving basically in the fourth quarter, where he made three or four or five big chunk plays. And the injuries in the secondary, and then there wasn't a singular special teams mistake outside of the blocked field goal, but the entirety of the special teams issues, the inability to execute an onside kick. I know people are going to be way too focused on LaShawn Sims fielding the punt at the end of the game. I agree with Vrabel. I don't care with 25 seconds to go. If you start from the 11 or the 20, you're probably not scoring points from a percentage standpoint. But there was just little mistake after the fake punt, the entire special teams issue, which we've talked about. When is it going to catch up to you? It was a part of the factor yesterday, but I don't think it was the factor. I think the factor was that Deshaun Watson was the best player on the field, and DeAndre Hopkins is probably the second best player on the field, and those two guys made huge plays in the fourth quarter, and your defense, including Logan Ryan getting beat a few times, including Kevin Byard getting beat a few times, you guys didn't make the plays you've been making the last 2 months.
Yeah, well, the classic play, and this was on when they were up now, 21-14, was, you know, it's the one that the Titans talked about all week. Dean piece up, you just those plays where all of a sudden it's now you're covering people for six, seven seconds. It was when Watson broke out left. Actually, LaShawn Sims had good coverage on Hopkins, but then it's a scramble play. He goes the other way, and it was just one of those, what are you going to do? But you mentioned Logan Ryan, who had a rough game. And
not that he was put in the best situation to succeed, because he's not a pure cover corner necessarily. And being asked to do that without Jackson and Butler, like, I get
sure,
that.
Sure. But you also got beat for another touchdown. The touchdown run for Carlos Hyde, you got to set the edge there. I mean, there's a lot of things with – he just didn't have a great day. But that 35-yard play on the winning drive was Logan Ryan and Kevin Byard, you know, bracketing him, and he just got past him. Yep. I mean, he just got past him, and it was a great throw. So you're right. I mean, I think the Texans, because of those two guys – or the better team. But I also think that, like, I wrote about the kicking issue at large, because I think now we don't know how it's going to turn out, but it looks like this season, that's what it's going to be remembered for, is all of that stuff. And the thing that I seriously don't understand above anything else, I know people are like, well, you should have got rid of Suck Up or whatever. It's like, well, that's a lot easier said than done. But Santoso is a kickoff specialist who can't get the ball to the end zone.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Why carry him on the
roster?
He's
9 for 17 on touchbacks.
I know, and it's amazing. You know, had they needed the touchback on that final kick with 2:04 to go, he wasn't going to deliver it to him, because Romo's clock management questions were really interesting at the end of the game. By the way, no, Tony, the clock doesn't run on an extra point. Settle down.
Really?
Yeah, he just had a lot of weird mistakes at the end of the game from a clock management standpoint. And listen, the onside kick was kind of a
it was awful.
It was like a wet fart, but again, onside kicks are a what percent chance? 20% chance you're going to get it, but you need to do a better job than that.
Oh, it's 6%? 6 in the last 2 years with these new rules. So it's
there you go.
But we've
it's incredibly
seen,
difficult.
Yes, but we've seen Ryan Suckup do a pretty good onside kick. Why was he not out there?
I
don't
totally
know.
Agree.
But I asked Vrabel about, like, did you think about King D? Because the thing is, when you have a 2 minute warning, you have that one stoppage. So now, you know, that punt that LaShawn Sims, you know, whatever you think he should, I couldn't tell if it was going to go in the end zone or not.
But it probably would have, and it was a mistake, but
you're
it didn't cost them the
you're
game.
Going to a Cal pitch play. You're going to a Bears Packers pitch play. But if you do kick, if you feel like you can just boom it out of there, you get the stoppage. Yeah. And now that punt, he's around his 25. And so now maybe you start at your 30 with 20 seconds left, and you have two shots to the sideline, and you actually give Suck Up a chance. So that, like, if you feel good about having a kickoff specialist because you're paying one, and then you can do that, then you actually increase your chances a little bit.
Yeah, I know this is going to sound weird, because normally the sum of the parts is greater than the whole is a positive thing. Can it be the sum of the parts is less than the whole? Like, that kind of defeats the purpose of the phraseology there, I think. But to me, it wasn't one. Obviously, the blocked field goal could point to that and say there's the 3-point difference right there. So I think that was the biggest miscue on special teams. But I think, again, the two questions we had coming into this game about this team were the injuries in the secondary, in particular at cornerback, against a very good quarterback who is extremely talented and a very good receiving core. And the overall special teams writ large, excluding Brett Kern, right? Like, outside of him, you don't have a guy who can kick off. You don't have a guy who can make field goals. You've had punt return issues the entire season. All these. Now, you've blocked kicks.
Yeah.
In multiple situations that were huge plays.
And you wouldn't be in this situation without those two blocked kicks.
But you cannot depend on blocking field goals to win football games. That is not a recipe to win games over a long period of time. So to me, it's the sort of the collection of the special teams mistakes the sum of those parts was greater than the whole influence on the game, if that makes sense at all, as I mix all of my cliches here together. But to me, again, here are the final, outside of the final possession for the Texans where they basically were just trying to milk the clock, so the three plays minus 2 yards and the punt. Take that drive out of it. Their last five possessions was the 12-play touchdown drive because it was returned to the 12-yard line. 9 plays, 72 yards, touchdown. 8 plays, 60 yards to the one, interception in the end zone. 7 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. 12 plays, 80 yards, field goal. Zero resistance. And that includes a couple drives in the first half. They didn't have many possessions in the second half because the Titans had a huge possession to start the second half, 9 minutes long. They didn't have possessions. They didn't have the ball. Yet every single time they did, you didn't stop them. And so to me, we can write about a lot of things with this game. Derrick Henry's health clearly was a factor, but he still got 21 carries. Ryan Tannehill still put up some numbers, although I think throwing the ball 35, 36, 37 times is not the recipe for this team to win coming from behind. Regardless, put all that LeSean Sims fielding the punt. I don't care about any of that as much as I care about the fact that the defense couldn't get a stop.
Well, and we haven't talked about the one aspect of that that to me I thought was a little hidden key, and it didn't turn out their way. They could not stop throwing. Carlos Hyde was getting 4 and 5 up the gut on them all day, and so they were giving them third and manageable a lot. And, you know, when you pair that, struggling to stop throwing, that's the second guy all year that's gotten 100 yards on this defense. Struggling to stop the run. He's a good player, by the way. People don't talk about Carlos Hyde's a really
good
player.
Over 1,000 yards.
And then you have the lack of pass rush that they had, and I thought it had to come from the inside in this game. You know, I mean, to me, it's like Casey and Simmons are the guy. Like, they've got to wreck some games.
Because Landry, a lot of times Landry was getting there, and then Deshaun Watson just does Deshaun Watson things.
Yeah, like Correa had the one great sack, but the combination of struggling to stop the run and then not getting that disruption inside, that hurts. I mean, yeah. I thought if Simmons is and Simmons made a huge play, but you know, with Simmons and Casey, that could be the thing that kind of compensates for what they don't have on the edge, but it's not doing it right now. And then you have a banged-up secondary against great players.
Yep, and guess what happens in the next 2 weeks? A banged-up secondary against great players. Hooray, Titans fans. So we will get you the latest on the Titans playoff picture when we return. They did get a tiny little bit of help, I think, last night.
Big.
So we'll discuss that. They are still sitting at 7th in the AFC playoff picture. We will explain what their playoff chances now look like after losing to the Texans yesterday 24-21 at Nissan Stadium. Joe Rexroad in for Derek Mason. My name is Braden Gall. Munson back there producing. What's up, Marquise? How you doing, man? Good to talk to you this morning.
I'm good, man.
All right, cool.
I'm living it up, man.
I like it.
Hashtag producer's life.
What does the playoff picture look like in the AFC, and what does yesterday's results mean for this Tennessee Titans team? We'll get to that when we come back right here on Morning Drive. The Houston Texans have taken commanding control of the AFC South as the rug pulled out from the Tennessee Titans yet again in December. I've lived here since 1997, Joe. I've been here longer than the Titans have, in theory. And because they were in Memphis, I believe, for that year. And it does feel like every single year they're going to do something like this when they're good that will just, you know, end all the joy and happiness. I will say this. It's not over. Okay. Now, the Texans take commanding control of the division yesterday with a 24-21 win at Nissan Stadium over the Texans. Joe Rexroad in for Derek Mason. Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. But I think there are still plenty of chances, plenty of ways and avenues for the Tennessee Titans to get into the playoffs. It is no longer in control of their own destiny, even if they win both games against the Saints and the Texans to end the season. They would finish at 10-6, but that still does not give them a playoff bid because the Texans, if they win both, would have a tiebreaker. If they lose, they would have the tiebreaker. They would both be tied at 10-6. The Texans would still get in, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are at 8-6 right now, who play the Jets next week, and the Ravens, which is not easy. If they win both, the Titans would not get in at 10-6. So they need some help. They got a little bit of help last night, Joe, with Buffalo beating the Pittsburgh Steelers to knock them down to 8-6. Now here's the bottom line. The Texans either need to lose both and the Titans win both, or the Steelers go 1-1 and you go 2-0. You have to beat the Steelers over a 2-week period of time. Essentially,
well,
right?
Yeah, well, except here's the weird thing with the Steelers is if the Titans and Steelers both go 10-6, the Steelers win the tiebreaker. If the Titans and Steelers both are 9-7 and the Titans win is over the Texans, then the Titans do get the tiebreaker over the Steelers. And that tiebreaker goes all the way down to like strength of victory, like point difference. So,
because the Steelers' loss would be to an AFC team.
Yes.
And that would knock their conference record down first, which is the first tiebreaker between the two of them. And,
right. Yeah. And now there's also, like, you still can't discount the Colts right now. Now, if the Colts, they're at New Orleans tonight. I think if they lose that, as they should, I think then you move that away.
They're done,
So, yeah, basically, like, I was going back and forth Twitter with some people last night about the Saints game. Well, why does the Saints game matter? Well, it still matters because, let's say you win that but lose to the Texans and you go 9-7. Well, you could still win the wild card.
Yep.
That way, if the Steelers lose both. So you still, like, the Saints game still matters.
And
we'll know Saturday. The thing is, we'll know Saturday if the Texans are AFC South champs, if they win at Tampa Bay, which, frankly, I don't think is a gimme at all.
The way the Texans, because, again, we saw Ryan Tannehill, and some of the good of yesterday was A.J. Brown and Ryan Tannehill, and we'll get to that because there are some things to say positively about this team.
Sure.
I thought, for example, the comeback and the fight in them, I think, was admirable yesterday. The defense just couldn't get a stop ever. The Texans can't rush the passer and they can't get off the field on third down. That's two of their biggest problems right now as a team. Jameis Winston is having one of the most bizarre statistical seasons in the history of the NFL. Now the Lions are terrible, but he threw for like 450 and four yesterday.
Two straight weeks, 450 plus.
And he also has got like 30 interceptions. He's going to have like 30 interceptions on the year too. So that Texans secondary is totally beatable. We saw it yesterday with Ryan Tannehill. Jonnu Smith just carved up people. He carved up chasing down a defensive player, and he carved up on a pitch play. He carved him up as a receiver. Jonnu Smith's athletic ability and A.J. Brown's athletic ability clearly showed you that you can be you're more athletic than the Houston Texans defense, and all those receivers for the Tampa Bay Bucks, they could absolutely win that game. The Jets are not a great football team by any stretch of the imagination, but are at home against the Steelers and could win that game because the NFL.
Yep.
So there are still plenty of paths for the Titans to get there, but if they win both games, they still need help from other people, and that's the issue with yesterday's loss.
Right.
These super deep thinking football coaches will tell you that control of your own destiny is not real because destiny is predetermined, blah, 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 blah. But the point is that you no longer control it yourself by just saying, hey, if we go out and handle our business and win games, we will get into the playoffs. They now need other people to do bad things for the Titans to get in.
Yeah, and I mean, the Steelers, of course, are at the Ravens at the end, which might sound good. Problem is, the Ravens could have the one clinched. And then, I mean, to me, if I'm John Harbaugh, I don't even think about playing Lamar Jackson that game. So then you may, the Ravens could still win. But obviously, that totally changes that game. But that win last night for the Bills.
Patriots are one with the win for the Patriots yesterday. By the way, they're only one game back of the Ravens. So that, but the Ravens have the tiebreaker. So it's likely that the Ravens' final week of the season is not going to mean as much.
But, and right off the top of my head, I don't remember what the Ravens have this week. But the Patriots need them to.
And for the first time ever, if I'm a team in the AFC, I would much rather face the Steelers than the Titans. That's never been a thing you could say out loud.
I totally agree.
The way the Titans are playing on offense and the way the team, like, especially if the secondary gets a little healthier and Adoree Jackson comes back, which we don't know, I guess. But, if I'm Baltimore and I'm sitting there going, okay, who do I want in the playoffs and who do I not want in the playoffs? Or who do I want to play and who do I not want to play? You don't want to play Duck. You don't want to play Ryan Tannehill. You have no problem playing Duck Hodges, you know?
Yeah. No, I honestly think a lot of teams would rather play the Titans than the Bills, too. Bills are – I love their defense. And, Josh Allen's a gritty QB who –
You mean you'd rather play the Bills, you mean, than the
Yeah,
Titans.
I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. I would rather – I think I'd rather play the Bills or Steelers than the Titans, honestly.
I agree. Yeah.
Now they're not in position to make that happen without some help. The Ravens – yeah, so the Ravens are at the Browns. Now, of course, the Browns are one of the two teams that have beaten them this year, but – So, yeah, they could have the one clinched up.
Is it possible that the Texans lose to the Buccaneers? Yes. Is it possible that the Steelers go 1-1? 100%. Those are the things you need to have happen. And if those two things happen and you go 2-0, you're in the playoffs.
What's more likely, any of those things happening or the Titans beating the Saints? who are in a chase for, you know.
They've clinched their division.
But they're still fighting for the one.
But they are fighting for the one. And so, listen, I think they can win that game because we've seen this Titans team under Mike Vrabel beat very, very, very good quarterbacks and very good teams. Now, Deshaun Watson, you know, sort of dispelled that rumor a bit yesterday as he just sort of sliced them up in the fourth quarter. But, this is the NFL. I look at all these games and I go, anybody can win. Like, it's just, this is not college where it's not about the outcome. It's about the point spread, right? Like, in the NFL, it's about the outcome. You don't know. The Raiders got beat 34-3 to the New York Jets, and the Raiders were playing as good a football as they've played in years, and they got smoked by the Jets. So right. I just, anything can happen in these games.
Sure, of course. It's just a bad matchup, especially, as you said, Adoree Jackson. I don't think he's miles from returning, but they miss him. They miss him badly. Yep. And we know they're not getting Malcolm Butler back, but having Adoree Jackson would be huge for this team in either of these remaining matchups. And I mean, Michael Thomas, you go from DeAndre Hopkins to Michael Thomas. The only
two receivers to catch at least five passes in every single game this year, and they're going to play all three of them all three of the last weeks of the season.
Sounds fun. And just the inability to get pass rush going.
Yeah.
That is
the difference, I think, when you talk about can they beat the Saints. Drew Brees has not got the mobility that Deshaun Watson does. So the idea, Deshaun Watson avoided more than one sack yesterday. Harold Landry totally destroyed the left tackle or the right tackle on a couple of plays and chased him to, and any other quarterback gets a sack, but because Deshaun Watson runs a 4-5, got out to the backside and released and maybe either threw it away or got a couple yards on a scramble, whereas most quarterbacks are sacked in that situation. So I do think that there were moments where you looked at Harold Landry and you're like, oh, he's got him, and then it's just Deshaun Watson doing something special. And that's something that Drew Brees cannot do next week. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I think this is – obviously, you can't overstate how important this game was for the Tennessee Titans. And again, my main takeaway is the secondary, because they did a good job on Deshaun Watson and two interceptions through the three quarters. They, you know, DeAndre Hopkins was largely bracketed and irrelevant in the first three quarters, at least from a production standpoint. He was creating opportunities for his other receivers, but he still just made huge plays in the fourth quarter. So to me, it's still about the defense. You know, Mike Vrabel, a little emotional after the game, and you were there. You interacted with him. There was some emotion with one of your questions. There was emotions with other questions. Did he handle himself well? Are we okay with what Mike Vrabel did in the post game? We'll get to Mike Vrabel's reaction to the loss, how critical it was, and our thoughts on all of that in the post game when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
First your play, should he have caught that? First in the end zone. It turned into a pick going the other way.
Should he have caught it? Like, come on, Joe. Like, you're a professional writer. Like, I don't know. Like, the guy came in and hit him as the ball got there.
Oh, come on, Joe. Come on, Joe. You're a professional writer.
That's the nicest thing a coach has ever said to me.
It might be, actually. Joe Rexroad. joining us here from The Athletic, Braden Gall, and he's in for Derek Mason. Derek Mason dealing with some shoulder recovery there. He played like 15 years in the NFL. I don't know if you guys know that. And so he took a few shots, and the shoulders are a little rough. So he had some surgery on Friday. Still recovering, so we wish him well. Should be back soon. Marquise Munson producing. So we'll get to your thoughts in that question and his response to you, Joe, you professional writer. Come on, Joe. Should he have caught the ball? This was another interaction. In fact, I think this is right when he came out. So he came out, Mike Vrabel, current head coach of the Tennessee Titans.
You got breaking news here, Brandon?
Yeah, exactly. This was also a little, here's another little snippet of Mike Vrabel's emotion after the game yesterday.
Walking in here with Stretch, I said, one idiot is going to ask me that question. Like, okay, whether it's on the 20-yard line or the 11-yard line. Like, let's go back and talk about the game.
So that was, of course, a question about the LeSean Sims fielding the punt. And it was the first question he got, which, again, we can discuss the merits of the question. I think that play is irrelevant in the outcome of the game. I think people are going to make too much of that. In fact, not to pick on my dear friend Jason Fitz, but even Jason Fitz this morning on Golic and Wingo, I was driving in and he's putting in his update, he's like, well, Titans lose 24-21 to the Texans because LeSean Sims fielded a punt on the 1 yard line.
Like,
no, Fitzy, that's not really what happened. That wasn't the outcome. But emotional for Mike Vrabel, showing some emotion after a critical loss. Now, do we like the head football coach of an NFL team calling a media member an idiot? Probably not. I also think it's a little tongue in cheek. I don't think he means it. I don't think he means it endearingly, but I don't think he means it really as an insult. What did you make of Mike Vrabel's demeanor after the game yesterday in the press conference? And obviously, you took a little. I don't know what you took. How do you view what Mike Vrabel said to you yesterday as? Insulting?
Look, first of all, with everything, I mean, you have to try to put yourself in the shoes of the other person. So this is a huge game, a hugely emotional loss. So, I mean, like, to me, I've been through a million of these at this point. I mean, you have to already have the mulligan in place on that, right? Like, I can't get worked up about a guy who pours himself into this job and then you have a loss like that, you know, being emotional. And that's what, he's an emotional guy. And he gets ticked off about some questions, and that's fine. You know, and also as far as my question about Firkser, and I think it's...
Do you think you should have worded it maybe a little differently?
I don't know. I mean, I was fine with... It was a great question. Great question, Braden.
I mean, of course he should have caught it, but yeah. I think I think what you were going for was... Like how big of a play that was, right? I mean, is that...
I guess. Yeah, that's true. I guess you could frame it that way. But honestly, I still don't know the answer because I
should
go back and forth because it's like, well, you're a professional pass catcher and this is what you get paid to do and the ball was right there. On the other hand, it was a perfectly timed hit by Reed. You know, the bad luck of that is just that Merciless just standing there like, oh, thanks, and goes, but I don't know the answer to the question.
Let's reenact it, all right? I'm very emotional right now. I'm very worked up. I just come off a loss. Last segment was terrible for me. I got to do better. I just said that Mike Vrabel was the former coach of the Titans. I need to fix that, right? I'm struggling emotionally right now. I'm a little hot right now. So let's reenact this. You asked me the question.
Braden, should Anthony Firkser have caught that ball?
Well, you'd love to see a tight end in that situation finish the play. He's on the end zone. It was a great drive. Tannehill delivered the football in a perfect location. Firkser was right where he needed to be, but sometimes you just got to give credit to the defense because they get paid millions of dollars to make big plays, and they delivered a perfect hit on the football, and their other guy just happens to be, you know, the linebacker who I completely developed and turned into a real NFL player is just happens to be standing there. And the ball, you know, sometimes the ball bounces that way. It's a funny game. It's football. You got to give credit to those guys for making great plays. You know, the execution on our part was perfect on that play. Just got to finish it. You got to hold it a little tighter. And, you know, it's something we'll take a look at and we'll see if we can correct it during the week.
Man, that would have been amazing. What a quote.
See?
You're a pro. Yeah, look.
Hold it a little tighter. What kind of coach are you?
That's off the top of my head right there. Now, I also didn't just lose a football game.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's so. I mean, look, it's and Vrabel is very much he is fiercely defensive of his players. He's never going to say this guy should have done this. And if he gets asked about this guy should have done this, he'll get mad or he might flip it into we all have to do better, right?
I mean,
or even, and that's a flip side of like, how well this guy's played? Usually it's like, the whole offense played. Like, he's just big on that. So as far as the initial thing, you know, the Sims play, honestly, I still don't know either on that. Like, when I saw it from my vantage point, which is on the other side of the 50 in the press box, I said, what are you doing?
It was a stupid play.
But I didn't know for sure it was going to go in the end zone.
I can tell you, I think it was going full speed into the end zone.
So, you know,
It would have bought you what? 5 seconds and 9 yards.
Yeah, you're still looking at one ridiculous try to pitch the ball around. It's not going to happen.
If you were to rank plays,
agree that. Yeah,
let's rank.
That's way down the list.
There's 150 plays in that game. Let's rank the number of plays that affected the outcome of the game. It's like 46th.
Yeah, it's right. I think what it is it's a mistake on a day when the Titans made a few too many, and so it's like, oh, one more to the end. So
it's last thing everybody saw. So
exactly. So like, what, you know, press conferences don't always go like, okay, let's prioritize what's most important. And sometimes it really is just like what you saw last, and that was a question that you know is fine to ask somewhere in there. First question, you know, you can argue it should have been some big picture question, but it just doesn't always go that way.
Do you think it's a mistake for him to use the word idiot as it pertains to media people? Because, again, I think if he's in New York or if I think he's in, I don't know, Chicago or Philly, especially Philly, if you call a writer an idiot, a media member an idiot, it's probably not going to come off well. I think in Nashville it can kind of come off well because everyone, and you are in that locker room a lot, you guys are a little bit more chummy, And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean you guys have a more personal relationship with Mike Vrabel, whereas that's not the case with Belichick or in Giants locker room or the Eagles locker room. Like, I don't know. You've been in many different markets. What do you think?
Look, I've been called some words I can't say on the air, okay? Many
times.
Can
you tell me the Tom Izzo, really?
Oh, man, I got some buttes from Izzo. So, I don't have a problem with it. Again, it's emotion. You have to understand the context of it. I think Vrabel is...
He's kind of smiling when he says it. Like, he's kind of...
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that you just brought up in terms of more chummy and all that. Like, I think Vrabel is... He's sort of like, in some ways, has a lot of like Belichick beliefs on dealing with media. It's just that he just has naturally more personality, so he makes more jokes and stuff
He also doesn't have 6 Super Bowls.
Well, sure. But like, I don't.
You can be more of a jerk when you got 6 Super Bowls.
Yes, this is true. This is true. But I don't. I really don't have a problem with any of this.
I don't either.
I think a lot of people who do, it's just. Maybe it's just like fans who are upset at the outcome and like, stop being a jerk, coach,
And fans are emotional after a tough loss too, as they should be. That's what makes you a fan, right? You're emotionally invested in something. Now, I think, again, the larger question for me, and we will have all of this week, next week, the following week, the offseason to discuss this forever until the end of time, which is, did the Tennessee Titans handle their special teams correctly this year? From start to finish, from the beginning to the end, all the decisions they have made, whether it was suck up in the preseason, bringing in Cairo Santos, Cody Parkey, Santoso, activating Ryan Succop a little early, whatever the decision is,
we could do a list on that.
We could do you, and I'm assuming. Listen, this is where I'm at your assignment desk here, right, Joe? There. If you want to do a timeline of special teams mistakes, and then you sprinkle in like the 3 big plays that they made on special teams, where they block a kick for the Chiefs and they block a kick for the Colts. And every single like 49-yard punt that goes out of bounds in the 3 for Brett Kern, because he's been special as he normally is. My bigger question here is, do you think the Titans have handled their special team situation correctly in 2019? And that is a large scale question about the entirety of the season, including the preseason, including activating Succop when they did, including getting rid of Cody Parkey. Like, all of these questions to me are fair. Because you can't return punts, you can't get the ball out of the end zone on touchbacks, you can't make field goals. It magnified itself yesterday with the onside kick being a little pathetic, a little kind of a dribbler there that was just soft and sad and just kind of it was like the most womp like onside kick I've ever seen. And so I think that is the question to me with the Tennessee Titans.
Cheap plug. This is basically what I wrote about theathletic.com today. And because I was like, this whole thing is just. And the one thing that you did mention in there is Vrabel's just belief that like Brett Kern is this offensive weapon that must be unleashed on the world. Like, I know this guy is going to make like
the running. Well, the running fake was a mistake because it should have been actually a fumble return for a touchdown. But
yes,
I actually don't. So let's get to that one then yesterday, because I actually don't have a problem with it. I'd like to know the stats on 4th and 10, and maybe Marquise, you could check to look this up. And I did not have a chance to do this last night. What are the statistical rates on 4th and 10 with your offense against the defense? What is the statistical rate on 4th and 10? I'm assuming the completion percentage is in the 30s, maybe 25s. I'm guessing here, but it's not a high percentage play. 4th and 10 with your offense.
Okay.
I actually don't mind. You got the matchup you want, and this is the fake punt, of course, on the 37-yard line when you're down by 7 or down. Excuse me, down 10.
No, it's 14-0 at that point.
It was 14-0.
Yeah, 14-0 late second.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I actually don't mind the shot there, because there's like a minute and a half left in the game, or in the second half, second quarter, and the Texans have 3 timeouts. So no matter what you do, if you go for it on 4th down with your offense and you don't get it, if you do the fake punt, if you punt, no matter what, your defense has to get a stop. No matter what, you got to get a stop, because they've got 3 timeouts and they've been going up and down the field. So it doesn't matter what you do there. If you don't have the football, the defense still has to go get a stop. The only thing that you could argue is if Brett Kern does his job perfectly, it's out of bounds inside the 10 or the 5, and that gives them a long field.
Yeah, like I
and that I could, yeah. that part I understand.
I couldn't disagree with you more here. I mean, first of all, yeah, if they were lucky, the defense actually had a great series there because the Texans get the ball at the 42 because you did that. You go in motion in the punt, and so you're tipping your hand already that it's a fake. You have Brett Kern pump faking left, and there's no chance on the play. You're telling
it was a one-on-one with one of your best athletes in space.
I mean, it's Brett Kern throwing the ball, and he did a nice shot for a punter.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, the guy just turned around and popped it. Gosh darn it, you got me all excited, Braden.
You did a very good job deflecting the microphone.
Yeah,
there.
We had video of that. I showed spiking the ball with the microphone. But
he did have to jump up in the air and make a good play, though.
Okay, but you're telling me you'd prefer that to just Ryan Tannehill, who's been red hot, throwing to a receiver?
I totally get that argument. That is a fair argument, and 100% Ryan Tannehill is a better thrower of the football than Brett Kern. There's no rational human being is going to argue that. But it's a bunch of their starting defensive players on the field too, so you gotta account for that.
I just feel like before the snap, we were all like, oh, so they're faking. Like you,
yeah, no, we all, yeah, I agree.
So I don't think there was ever really a chance on that play. He threw up a lollipop, and the guy said, "Okay, I'll spike it right to the ground."
I guess my issue is, or my non-issue, I don't know what exactly I'm saying here, is that the design of the play was to be a lob pass to a player in one-on-one coverage. That was the design of the play. So the design of the – we can question maybe the design of the play then, but the design of the play, they got what they designed. The question is it the right design, and did they make the right call at the right time? And we could argue those things, and it sounds like you disagree with all those things. I'm just not sure it makes a difference. Like again, you had to get a stop either way. The Texans had three timeouts and the ball – and the Titans delivered a big stop on that situation. Yeah, one of the few times they actually did deliver a stop.
Right, but if they're at the 10, and you can pretty much count on that with Kern punting, then it's a very different situation.
That's fair.
They were in position, and now you're about to be up down three scores because you tried this. And again, Tannehill, throw a little hitch or a little slant to A.J. Brown and get 10 yards. I could see that working better than what they did.
And that's totally fair. You might be 100% right on that. There were other things that happened in sports this weekend outside of the Tennessee Titans losing to the Houston Texans 24-21. Corey Curtis is going to join us from News 2 coming up top of the hour. But you are a Heisman voter. I am a Heisman voter. And Joe Burrow is your 2019 Heisman Trophy winner. We will get to our ballots when we return. Very emotional night on Saturday night in New York right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Joe Rexroad from The Athletic in for Derek Mason, Braden Gall, and Marquise Munson producing. So you are a Heisman voter, and I am a Heisman voter. We'll get back to the Titans coming up top of the hour, and so we might as well release our ballots here. So we'll do that in just a second. Joe Burrow is your runaway winner by basically every major statistical category, the largest and easiest Heisman Trophy winner in the history of the award. Margin of victory, 1,846 points, beat O.J. Simpson. Percentage of ballots, 95.5%, which by my math means there were 43 people that did not put Joe Burrow on their ballot. We can get to those people in a second. The most points ever for a Heisman Trophy winner in terms of total points, 94% basically, and the highest percentage on first place votes, 90%. Basically the most worthy and deserving and dominant Heisman performance by any player in the history of the game, and also a fitting speech, a short 5.5-minute speech. We're going to give you a little snippet of this because I think, Joe, it was one of the best speeches I have ever heard by a Heisman Trophy winner. It's why every single locker room he's ever been in loves him, and it's why NFL GMs are going to fall in love with him, and he's going to be the first pick. This was a little bit of Joe Burrow from Saturday night.
I want to thank my O-line first. Sadiq, Adrian, Ed, Lloyd, D-Lou, Austin, Badara, Thad, our tight end with the chips for guys like Chase. Those guys have been unbelievable this year, and I couldn't have done it without them. I got so many weapons on the outside, Terrace, Jamar, Justin. I mean, those guys have been unbelievable. All my teammates have supported me, welcomed me with open arms, kid from Ohio, coming down to the Bayou and welcomed me as brothers. And it's been so awesome. My parents, like Tom said, my dad, had first time in 51 years that he wasn't a player or a coach, and him retiring this year has been, you know, a dream come true for me and my family. My brother's in the audience, my mom. And I'm just so thankful for LSU and Ohio State, playing at two of the best programs in the country. Great coaches both places. It's my journey. I wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world. Coming from Southeast Ohio, it's a very, very impoverished area, and the poverty rate is almost 2 times the national average, and there's so many people there that don't have a lot. And I'm up here for all those kids in Athens and in Athens County that, you know, go home to not a lot of food on the table, hungry after school. You guys can be up here too. Coach O, you have no idea what you mean to my family. You know, I didn't play for 3 years. You took a chance on me, not knowing if I could play or not. And I'm forever in your... forever grateful for you. And to LSU, I sure hope they give him a lifetime contract. He deserves it.
Joe Burrow with one of the more emotional, genuine, and fantastic speeches I've ever seen from a Heisman Trophy winner. Again, 362 yards per game, 78% completion percentage, which, by the way, Robert Griffin had the record for a Heisman winner at 72%, so he obliterated that number. 48 total touchdown passes. That's first in college football. His team's 13-0. He did it against top 10 teams week in and week out. He was number one on my ballot, Joe. I'm going to jump across the studio and strangle you if he wasn't number one on your ballot. But just an outstanding speech, an outstanding season. And here's the other thing. Two more wins away, probably, Joe, from arguably one of the greatest single seasons of all time by a quarterback.
Yeah, this was probably about as easy as it gets. And it does make me, you joked about strangling me. I'd like to know. I'd like to hear from some voters who didn't have him first. To me, it was pretty easy.
I think there are nine.
Pretty hard to defend not voting him number one.
I want to say there's 928 votes. Does that sound right? Something
like
that. Yeah,
that's right in there.
He got 841 first place votes. Jalen Hurts got 12. He finished second. Chase Young got 6. He finished third. Justin Fields got 20 first place votes but finished fourth place. Jonathan Taylor got 6 first place votes. J.K. Dobbins 2. Trevor Lawrence 3. And Tua got 1. My ballot was Joe Burrow 1, Justin Fields 2, Jonathan Taylor 3, running back for Wisconsin at number 3. I thought Justin Fields with 50 total touchdowns and one interception for another 13-0 team, you know, winning week in and week out against high-level competition and producing like that, I just had Fields at 2. And I thought Taylor was more about value. Wisconsin was in the playoff conversation when they had the lead against Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, and the only reason they were even there in the first place is because Jonathan Taylor. Maybe a little bit of a career achievement there for me, but I think Jonathan Taylor was my third place vote.
No, I don't mind that at all. I do mind Justin Fields finishing fourth. To me, I just looked at it like Burrow, there's no question, and I thought Fields was a clear 2. Like you said, 50 touchdowns, you know, and if you're just going passing, it's 40-1 TD to pick.
It's incredible.
He made a massive difference for a team that obviously can win it all. I hope that...
Should the Heisman come after the national championship?
You could make
that case.
It's like
the NFL MVP coming after the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, you could make that case. I mean, it's... This has been something that was so big when it was like a few years ago, like this, you know, it's kind of like a weekend where there's a gap and it's like and now I feel like it gets so lost anyway.
I like, think it's
I
a great.
I don't have a problem with it if they pushed it back to like mid-January.
I think
something.
It's a great off-ramp for college football as a college football junkie to have Army, Navy, some big-time college hoops in there, and then the Heisman is sort of like the off-ramp from the regular season. Like
That's a
nice little kind of like, all right, you've had this you have 14 weeks of intensity. Let's kind of just relax into the bowl season, get fat and happy on some Christmas dinner, and then saddle back up again for the national championship games. But Joe Burrow, far and away the most successful, broke every single record. From a voting standpoint, he broke every single record on the in the history of the award, and is well-deserving. I think the 40, whatever the number is, 43 voters that did not have them on their ballot at all.
That's ridiculous.
To watch Joe Burrow play football this year and not think he was one of the 3 best players is, I think that deserves, like,
again, you should have your vote taken away.
You need to explain that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And that's where it gets into, You know, it's, I mean, you can't, you have to, if you're going to be a voter, you have to take this seriously. And you can't, there's no way a serious voter doesn't have Joe Burrow. Again, I think Fields also, it's hard for me to justify that he wouldn't be in your top three if you're a voter. The three is, I mean, Jonathan Taylor, I think that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Chase Young for me at one point, and I voted for Sue first that year. I love the idea of a defensive player winning it. Yep. And I was thinking about him, but then, look, he just wasn't a factor in the Michigan game. They won, but, like, he wasn't a factor late. Like you said, we were talking in the break.
Two games.
Yeah. So I went with Jalen Hurts third.
No problem with that at all.
My colleague David Ubbin went with Lynn Bowden from Kentucky. And honestly, I don't have a problem with that. You know what? He's like, hey, I mean, think about what he did. And it's true. I think you can go a lot of different ways with a three this year.
I think it was the hardest two and three I've ever had to do. It was the easiest first place decision I've ever had to make.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an easier. I mean, there are some. There are some obvious years. I mean, I think RG3, I think, was a pretty easy one. Right? I get jumbled too. Like,
yeah,
who
I did
was
not
in
vote
what year?
I was not a voter at that time, but I voted for Christian McCaffrey over Derrick Henry. I know in this market that's going to get
a tough one.
But I think they were both. But it made second place super easy.
You could make that case either way very well. I voted for Henry, but
It made second place super easy. Derrick Henry, done, easy. I voted for Deshaun Watson over Lamar Jackson. Well, it made it easy for me to put Lamar Jackson at two. Clear cut, done. So when one is hard, it makes two easy. When one is easy, it makes two hard. So those are our ballots. You went with Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, and Jalen Hurts. I went with Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, and Jonathan Taylor. I don't think there are any wrong answers at two and three. I'm okay with whatever you put in there. We do have a $100 gift card to Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. We will give that question away here momentarily. You have to tweet at 1025_MD. Same deal this week as we did last week. We're giving away a $100 gift card every single day. We'll have a question for you here coming up as well. Corey Curtis, we get back to the Titans as they lose 24-21 over the weekend in a really rough weekend for Nashville sports as the Tennessee Vols play a very ugly basketball game against the Memphis Tigers. Great win for Penny, but I know you were there, right?
Yep.
For that game. And then the Predators on Saturday night, an ugly performance as well. So just a rough weekend for Nashville and Tennessee sports fans. Corey Curtis, when we return, News 2 Morning Drive. Joe Rexler, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.